This is Ben Goujon with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today I am talking art with poet, author, and educator, and the founder of Young Lions Roar, Mr. Aubrey Barnes. Aubrey, welcome to Talking Art.
Hey.
I'm so excited to have you here today and
yeah.
to get to sit down and talk. How you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. I had a little warm-up, I feel like, before this, because I was at Augustana College talking to a classroom about just kind of like what I do and kind of like its interweavings with like activism and stuff like that. So we got a little warmed up before this. So I'm appreciative of that, and I appreciate you reaching out for me for these. I don't do like a lot of these that much anymore. So it's cool when I get the chance to.
That's awesome. I'm super excited to have you here, and I'm glad you talked about your activism, because we're going to talk about that a little later.
Most definitely.
But I first got to know you through Quad City Arts Metro Arts Program,
mm-hmm.
and you were our lead artist for our poetry apprenticeship.
Yep.
And it's been so fantastic over the years watching you work with these students and helping them find their voices, which is what I find so inspiring about you and your work, is how you help these young kids find their voice. Could you talk to me a little bit about that and what that means to you, both personally and professionally as a poet?
Yeah. I think the personal and the professional is kind of like interwoven with themselves in some kind of way. And that, so I started writing poetry when I was in junior high, you know, when I was in seventh grade. And I tell folks like, it was kind of like my way of like expressing myself when I wasn't really a vocal person. Like I still am introvert now, but it's just like it looks different now, where like as a kid I just didn't talk to people, like it just wasn't a thing that I did. So but I always had things to say, and kind of like finding poetry in kind of the unique way that I did in junior high, it kind of influenced me to like write about my own story, you know, from like just the mundane things like cross country practice, where we ran to for cross country, to like things that I was kind of like thinking and kind of developing, that like any 11-year-old would, you know, like I think in junior high is kind of like where you start like becoming like aware of yourself and aware that you have ideas and thoughts, you know, about things. So a lot of that was kind of like, was kind of found in junior high when I started writing poetry, you know, and I did that from junior high to high school, was very kind of like did to myself, never really shared my work and stuff like that. But it was always an influence on my life, to the point where like in college, my first major in college before education was creative writing, because I wanted to be a short story writer. I never saw it being what it is now. I just knew that I wanted to create.
Sure.
You know, so for me, in retrospect, a lot of my journey creatively in junior high and all that was like kind of me figuring it out on my own, because there wasn't, you know, in the Quad Cities, like, you know, there's not a lot of people who are said like poets. There's people who do poetry.
Yeah.
You know, there's people, maybe I have to digress a little bit, because like people like Shelley Moore Guy, you know, who are amazing,
mm-hmm. yeah.
historic people to Rock Island, they turned themselves poets, you know, but they weren't all, that wasn't like a norm, and they weren't given the platform where like us kids could see them and be like, oh, wow, you could do this as a thing. So a lot of it was me kind of figuring out how to kind of like do poetry on my own. So, and kind of like fast forwarding now, Young Lions Roar is kind of like giving what I didn't have when I was in junior high, you know, having someone there who is there like in this present moment, you know, like me, like part of my career is being a poet, you know?
Yeah.
And like being able to like be that here in the Quad Cities, where people don't see that a lot, you know, for me, it's like, it's beneficial for those kids to kind of have something that I didn't have, where they can see the possibility of this being a thing if they have that, if they have that interest, you know, because some kids who are part of Young Lions Roar, they just want to be heard, you know, they don't want to be like a poet or anything. And I'm like, that's amazing, you know, but for those who want to, they see it. So for me, like just having that personal, it's kind of like fulfilling what I didn't have, as a kid, and kind of like being able to like do that professionally. I think that's kind of like the driving force, is giving what I didn't have and seeing it develop in these kids.
Yeah, and what you do with those students in both Young Lions Roar and with the Metro Arts Apprenticeship Program is really incredible. Like I said, just seeing them find their voices and the confidence it gives them and that mm-hmm. outlet and that place to share those thoughts and those feelings they're having is really incredible. You were talking about finding a place when you're a kid to express those thoughts, mm-hmm. you know, because I think that's one thing that when you're growing up, you don't always know what that outlet is. Like, you're seeing the world around you, and it's you're learning and taking all this stuff in and trying to process it. And for you, you know, you found that in poetry. One thing that I really admire about you is the, like, poetry is a, obviously it's a written form, and it's also a spoken form,
mm-hmm.
you yeah. know? And one thing I know I learned in English class growing up was that, like, poetry isn't meant to be read aloud.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people see it like, oh, it's a book of poems.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
that's just on the written page. But both you and your art and the work you do with your kids, it's about, there's the performance element of it. How do you find kind of the, I guess, what is different or the balance of poetry on the written page versus spoken aloud?
Yeah, I think they just kind of evoke different things. And I think the when you first asked that, I kind of like remind myself that, like, this is my education brain too. You know, like I would just go for education, but it's just like, it's kind of realizing like there's various different types of learners, right? There's kinesthetic learners who learn through body movement and all that. There's audible learners who like learn by being mm-hmm. spoken to. Visual learners who learn by seeing. And like that never changes because we're lifelong learners, right? Like
yeah.
as long as we're human, we're learning for a lifetime. So for me, like both speak to different people. You know, when I put poetry on a page, you know, in the forms of books, and various kind of like blogs or publishing spaces that I write for, like it speaks to a different sector of people who wouldn't be able to like sit with this work in the same way someone who is more likely to like sit with it listening to would, yeah. you know? So I think like both have their place, you know, there's always this debate of like, is one better than the other? But I think they both have their place because like there's different people who resonate with both different types. So for me being a creative, I'm like, it's always important for me to have both different types, you know, to be able to speak to both different types in that. Cause we all take in information and learn in a different unique way, you know? So for me, both are necessary. And I think like when you kind of think about it, I think just the presentation part, I think like it has a lot of like cultural connection to me. When you think about said like black culture and creativity, like a lot of that is there's written work. Obviously, you have like writers like James Baldwin mm-hmm. and like even like Langston Hughes who like were page writers. But I'd even say Langston Hughes also like shared his work too. But like in kind of like said black culture, you have like this big emphasis on like the sharing of your work by storytelling. That's yeah. been a thing for years, like
yeah.
years and years to come, you know. And I think that's still a thing, you know. When I kind of think about our open mics that we run in the community and I kind of look at the demographic that's usually at our open mics, it's usually like – people in the black community who are like mid-20s and up, and up mm-hmm. can be up in like 50s, mid-50s and late 50s. And like we have a diverse crowd like with that still, but like that's usually the majority of our audience. And I think it's because like there's a draw that they have to like hearing work and sharing their own work by word, you know?
Yeah.
And that just speaks to them in a different way. And I think that's just very ancestral and kind of like a thing that's just always been a thing. And like where page poetry speaks to a different sector of people, you know, people who could still be in said black culture who love reading, but also those who aren't really privy to that listening, but can get something out of it reading wise. So, yeah, for me, it's really interesting to kind of see like it's really interesting. And I'm grateful to kind of be able to like have an art form where I can like navigate in these different spaces. Like I said, I was just at Augustana College kind of like talking about my work there, you know, and emphasizing on like the written work there, what I do like writing work wise,
yeah.
where other spaces I'm kind of like talking about presentation work wise, or even just kind of helping with just presenting my own art. So it's cool to kind of see these different communities of people and seeing how like written work sits with them different than like presentation poetry and vice versa. So yeah, I think both have a meaningfulness, you know.
Well, and that's something too that I think is interesting about the collections of poetry that you've put out, is there's a really distinct visual element to them as well. And I know you've worked with artists and designers to help craft those.
Yes.
What do you think that adds to the words on the page?
Yeah, I think it just kind of like it gives like a it just gives a different aesthetic that kind of like complements the work in a really unique way. You know, my last book, which was published by which I collaborated with my friend Mazel, who's an amazing visual artist who's from the Quad Cities but is based in Wisconsin now. We collaborated in kind of like her creating pieces that kind of like mirrored what my written work kind of like emphasizing all that. And I think there's just something about like visual art. Like I'm a big fan of like visual art. Like when I was in junior high and high school doing like literary arts, I was also drawing pictures and I was really into like illustrating and all that.
Yeah.
Cause I think like it just has, it tells a story in a different way. You know, it tells a story in a very like, in a way where like, it's just there where like reading work, you have to like read and pay attention to that. Where like visual art, you just look at it and it kind of speaks to you just from that. So I think like with kind of collaborating with like visual artists, with my work, it kind of just gives a deeper layer of the work that I put together, where like it gives like this visual that kind of works as like a, to me, kind of a meditative piece of just like, once you kind of read this and you kind of see this, it kind of speaks to this in a different way, you know, which kind of may resonate with people in a different type of form. So I think it's always important to like have those visual and like literary arts kind of tied together for that reason. Cause again, like it's just a different layer of how it can like speak to people or like make them resonate with the ideas or the feeling of the poetry a little bit more deeper.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad you talked about that meditative, cause that's kind of how I've approached your collections. When I read them is like, you know, for me sitting down and just like reading an entire book of poetry, like you kind of start to tune out. But it's like, I've got it on my desk at work and I can grab it and read one poem and just kind of let that sit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like I'm going to read the whole book right now.
Yeah. But,
you know, you kind of sit with the ideas that you present. And you know, you were talking about your activism earlier and you bring so much of that into your work.
Mm-hmm.
What do you find that relationship is between, you know, your poems and your activism, and how do you try to tie those together?
Yeah. So, thank you for, I thank you for just reading my work the way you do. I always tell people like, when I run into people who are like, oh, I read your book in one day. It's just like, that's great. But did you like sit with
it
though?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like, I want you to like sit with it and all that. So I appreciate you for that. But, I think like when it comes to like my work activism wise and poetry wise, I think like on one level, like I think it's, both are like so interwoven with each other. You know, when you think about it from, again, like a historical perspective, like activism is to me is like, it's synonymous to like my personal life, you know, like from the moment I wake up to,
sure,
to drive a car, to teach, to talk to people about what I care about, like activism's in that language, you know, in some kind of way, shape or form, you know? So, with it being so tied closely to what I do, like, I think it's just like second nature for it to kind of spill out into my work, you know, because my personal experience is, you know, is a form of activism. And I think like when you kind of think about writers such as the ones I brought up, you know, James Baldwin, Langston Hughes, you know, and even Dr. Imada Budi, who I had the privilege of having an interview with months ago at Augustine College, who was one of the forefathers of the Black Arts Movement in Chicago, you know, all these guys who are like activists through their writings and through their poetry. It's always been within said Black culture where like your narrative, your experience is going to be in your work in some way, shape or form, just like any kind of poetry. But I think the difference is when it comes to like the activism is that like when you're under so much said like oppression in some kind of form socially and all that, it's gonna bleed into your work in some kind of way, even in the most like subtle type of ways, like from you talking about your feeling a lack of identity or seeing yourself as a student within a school system that doesn't have like teachers who look like you or come from the narrative that you do.
Sure.
That's activism. When you're talking about like that sense of like depression and noticing that, that's activism. So for me, it's not one of those things that I have to like really force. It's just like, it just comes naturally through like talking about my life experience, you know?
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. And how do you, when you're creating a collection of poetry or, you know, working on new pieces, like how do you, is there some kind of master plan to that curation of a message, or do you kind of try to let that come a little more organically
when you're
writing?
Yeah. I'm always for like kind of letting it come organically first, you know, and just kind of like whatever thoughts I'm thinking and whatever it's on, like, let me just write whatever that one thought is that may be the one thought that's making me think this. And let's let that idea kind of spill and become its own thing.
Sure.
First, you know, so just kind of like writing that and just kind of like letting myself write and not put too much thought into it at first. And that's, I used to kind of just keep it at that. But as I've kind of been like getting like mentorship from really well-known poets, which I'm grateful for, they've kind of shown me ways of just kind of like taking it and taking those ideas that you kind of like spill primarily and kind of like crafting those in a way of like maybe expanding on something, like, okay, you said this in this fourth line, expand on the idea because that's actually really interesting, and and you don't really need this part because you said this part five times in five different ways here, you know. But I've been learning to kind of like kind of refine my work in that, but like just from like the from the start, like I just let my ideas just kind of spill, you know, and not just try to think about it. Cause again, like poetry is there for that reason. So they're just kind of like, get those ideas spilled out. I think like, but for me, when you become someone who does it as a thing, as like as a career, there's a self-ordained responsibility, I guess, for my personal experience that like, I want to like convey this idea to someone who's not me, who doesn't get it in a way that's like, okay, how can I make the story maybe talk about it on a more personal level where you kind of like get it. How can I put more of me in it? Cause that's one thing I've been kind of getting mentored by with my, and this is my mentorships. There's this poet named Ephraim Nehemiah, who's an amazing poet who I've been, getting mentorship for the last 2-3 months. And when the first thing he said to me, that really kind of changed my perspective was that he's like, man, you have really good poems, but I don't see you a lot in your poems. Like, it's like, you're right here. And your poem's right here and your audience is right here. He's like, I want to see you in that. And I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. You know, that makes a lot of sense. I'm not putting myself in them enough. So as of lately, my work's kind of been kind of like honestly returning to older pieces and being like, okay, how can I show myself in this and be more said vulnerable in this and kind of show myself in a way where like this idea makes sense to someone, you know?
Yeah. When you're writing, do you think of them in that way of as written pieces or as oral pieces?
Yeah, I kind of just I don't really kind of I let them kind of be what they are, you know, because I think now I think when I first started writing poetry, when I was like, well, not when I first started writing poetry, but when I first started writing poetry for the sake of like sharing it.
Yeah.
I was kind of writing it from the perspective of like, all my poems are going to be ones that I share on stage. Every single one of them.
Right.
You know, and now I'm kind of in a place of like, you know, there's some poems that, you know, I might just have 8 lines to talk about this one idea.
Yeah.
And that's it, you know?
Right.
And that's, I don't need to share that to people. Like, you know, orally, that could just be right on the page for someone to read. And I've been writing a lot of haikus as of lately, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's some people who kind of like make it a thing to kind of share their haikus, like, you know, presentation-wise. But for me, it's just like, man, like, I think there's a lot more power in this poem if I just let it be on this page and let someone kind of sit with it and all that. So, like, I never know what there's going to be until, like, you know, I'm in the process of kind of, like, writing it. And I'm asking myself the question of, like, okay, do I need to expand on this idea? Or did I already tell the narrative through these 4 lines, 8 lines, and if I did, cool, but maybe some ideas need 32 lines, you know, and all this, but I just never know until I'm like right there kind of with it, and I kind of just let it be what it is, you know, as opposed to being like, this is going to be this, because it kind of gives, I'm always reminding myself that like poetry in and of itself, it's like, it's its own said person, you know, where I'm this person and poetry's this, and it's like, I'm always trying to listen to like what the poetry is leading me to. Like if it's telling me that I need to write this to be a presentation poem, we're going to do that. But if, if I just put my ideas down in 8 lines, that's all I need. So I've been trying to be more cognizant of that, of just like, you know, not trying to write with the intent of like this being shared, but just kind of being like, okay, let me just let this idea spill out as it does and we'll see where it goes, you know?
Yeah, I've always been in love with the idea, and I don't remember where I first heard this quote, but the idea of like, if you wanted me to write something shorter, you needed to give me more time. Yeah. And the idea that like just that editing, like poetry is not always, but typically a, you know, it's a very succinct, sparse art form of,
yeah,
these are the words I need. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to use any more. I'm not going to use any less. Like, these are the words I need. Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself kind of in your process, like just kind of, this is how I, when I write, it tends to happen is like, I just spew.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, okay, now we're just cutting.
Yeah.
And trimming back. Mm-hmm. And making the tweaks. Like, do you kind of approach your writing like that? Or do you kind of go in with a very succinct idea, or just let it happen?
Yeah, I just kind of go in with just like one idea, and I kind of just let that idea kind of like spill out. You know, I like, it's, for example, I have this poem that I've been wanting to write for the last couple of weeks, from hearing this, I heard this friend say, like, we were talking and they're talking about how like they can't recall when the last time they had a sleepover was.
Yeah.
And like, for me, I'm like, man, like, that's actually a really dope idea. Like, we never know like when our last thing is. You know, so for me, like, there's that idea there, you know, so like when I approach to writing that, for me, it's just like, I don't know what that's going to look like, but I know that there's this idea there. And I know that idea is there because I've been thinking about it for the last 3 months since that conversation. So I'm like, there's something there. And for me, it's just like the freedom of, for me personally, just letting that idea spill the way it should. Because I think sometimes I have a lot of creative friends, you know, who like get so stuck on like trying to make something perfect, like, oh, I don't want to approach this unless the wording's perfect, unless this is perfect and all that. For me, perfection's going to come, you know?
Yeah.
But I think perfection in that realm, like, it'll stifle you, because, like, it's always going to stop you, because you want to, it's like wanting to not jump into a deep end of the pool until you know how to, like, move your arms in the water or mm-hmm. position your body so that you'll float. It's just like, sometimes you just got to jump in and just let that lead you however it leads you, you know? Don't worry about perfection. Just worry about the process, you know? So for me, that's usually kind of my go-to. Like, I kind of, like, I tell people, I kind of look at writing as kind of like carpentry, sort of, you know? When you have a carpenter who's wanting to make this table, they have this giant, you know, slab of wood or a bunch of pieces of wood that they know is going to be the thing, you know, mm-hmm. but the thing is just like, they just have this here, you know, and they slowly kind of work over it and kind of like craft it and all that. So for me, like, I kind of do the same thing with my work, where I'm like, I just need these proverbial slabs and all that. And, you know, that, and that's just the, you know, just the idea and the spilling of the ideas, you know, everything else can come after, you know. I'm not going to get caught up in like trying to make this perfect when I'm trying to like just have something to work with. And after that, that's when kind of like that said, the said work of perfection comes of, like, okay, now that I have these 70 lines, let's see, how can I condense this to 40 lines?
Right.
and kind of do this, that, and the other. But I always let the idea spill first, you know, because I think that's the freedom of creativity, just letting your idea spill and not hold yourself back, you know, and just kind of letting it come, regardless of how you think it'll sound, how foolish you think it'll sound or whatever, because it's just like, it's, you know, it's okay for it to sound whatever, but if you don't get those ideas out, you never have anything to work with, you know?
Yeah, I think that's such a trap for young creatives, is thinking it's got to be, my first draft has to be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, no, let it be messy.
Yeah, yep. Like, I call the first draft the BS for first draft.
Yeah. You know,
you're gonna cringe at it a little bit, but that's okay. The fact that you cringe, now you have something to be like, okay, what parts make you cringe? What can you change? Or ask yourself, why does it make you cringe first? You know, because maybe the reason that it makes you cringe is a reason to keep it in there sometimes too, if it's like sharing that vulnerability part, you know. But so it's, you know, but again, you just don't have it unless you just let yourself be imperfect. Just let it come out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so much of it is just about the act of doing it and getting it on the page. Because you can sit on that I've got the first sentence of the great American novel sitting on my computer.
Yeah.
I don't know the next line, so I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The first line sits there forever.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, you just gotta, it's kind of getting into that, like, and this is kind of like one of the other reasons why I like working with kids. It's like, especially like fourth and fifth grade, like they don't have those mental blocks.
Sure.
They're in this like creative energy where they're just like, man, like I had a student when I was at this one school teacher, fourth grade, and she was awesome. Like she found out that I was a poet, and like literally one day she wrote on these little note cards, she wrote like 20 little poems on like about a peach, an apple, yeah, a cat, and a dog. And I still kept them. I was like, this is cool. Cause like she's not letting anything stop her from like creating in this moment.
Right.
Whereas an adult would be like, I don't want to write about a fruit. There's nothing significant about a fruit. I was like, are you sure? Like this fourth grader wrote a lot of significance about this fruit in seven lines, you know? But like, I think like tapping into that part where you just create and don't even think, like that's just tapping back into like that inner child in you of just like creating without thinking about how perfect it is. Cause like perfect sometimes is just a projection of what we perceive others will think about it. But when you take others out of that equation, you're like, I'm just gonna create. I don't give a crap about what these body people think, or even what my own ideas think. I'm just gonna create. Like, I think you're tapping into a really awesome part of yourself when you're able to just do that and not have those blocks, you know?
Yeah, and it's a muscle, you know? Creativity is a muscle that you have to practice.
Yes.
And when you're sitting there waiting for the perfect thing, you're not exercising that muscle. Like, you got to create the good things and the bad things. And
Yep. Things. All the things, yeah. You just got to do it. You just got to create, you know?
Yeah. You know, talking about your fourth and fifth graders, tell me a little more just about Young Lions Roar and what exactly the program is and how that got started.
Yeah. So it's a program that like, I feel like we're always kind of like really refining like what it is. And in this present moment, like it's a program in which like we provide like after school programming, in school programming, and also professional development for like professionals, you know, pertaining to like the literary arts of poetry. Sure. And kind of like, and its utilization and pertaining to like helping, youth and clients, have a space of creative expression, just kind of tapping into like what I was talking about earlier, that like that inner child, and like some of the kids are already children, so they already have that part, you know, but like given that space of like, you're here, we're here to like give you a space to be creative. We're not here grading you, you know, I'm a teacher, I have teaching experience, but like, I'm not here to like grade you on your spelling, grade you on this, like, you're just here to be creative and to get your ideas out and understand that your ideas have a sense of power behind them, you know, because you created them.
Right.
You know, so really facilitating spaces in that regard, but also in a practical sense, really kind of giving a space where students can develop their like reading and writing. You know, I was just talking at Augustana College and really kind of like going over some like rough statistics, specifically in Rock Island Mountain School District. You know, a lot of the kids that struggle with reading and writing are from lower socioeconomic, so more specifically are usually like said Black students, you know, who don't have a lot of skills in reading and writing, which like are important skills, you know, because reading and writing is where you develop, for me, critical thinking, you know, and comprehension, which is needed all over the world, you know, needed in every facet, you know, from reading contracts, reading job descriptions and all this, you know, so providing poetry in a sense where we're helping kids develop the reading and writing part has been like critical in kind of like a practical way of like what we provide for students who may not be that much into the creative part, but they need that help, you know, with the reading, writing development. So that's one practical aspect. And the other was just kind of like providing a space that kind of like helps students develop productive mental health practices, you know, through writing, you know, because I tell people all the time, like for me, like if I didn't do poetry as a career and like as a thing, I would still do it because of what it's taught me about me and how to deal with my depression, you know, deal with my anxiety. You know, I had a younger sibling pass away a couple years ago, and like processing grief has been big in that writing process. So for me, it's just like, you know, there's a lot of students that like kind of like when you think about the mental health conversation within like the spaces of education, that's been a prevalent conversation the last, what, like 4 years since the pandemic, that kids are experiencing depression.
Yeah.
You know, they're experiencing anxiety. And it's not like they haven't always, you know, but they're now putting like, oh, this is what it is. And like, And it's kind of been a question of like, what do we do about that? You know, so just understanding for myself how creativity's kind of helped me with my own kind of mental capacities and mental health, wellness and all that. It's been important to kind of provide it in that space. You know, I've done a lot of workshops that kind of like teach poetry for trauma-informed care. And I'm grateful to like work with therapists in the community who've kind of helped me kind of craft what this looks like, you know, sure. And just providing writing from that aspect and all that. So that's what Young Lions Roar is. And it was kind of birthed out of just being an educator. You know, I was an educator for 10 years. And when I say educator, I mean like from para educator, teaching assistant, at risk junior high teacher, fourth grade. It's all education. It's all teaching to me, you know, but like my, when I got into junior high teaching, I just realized that the space didn't facilitate what my philosophies of education, how I think that like that should work with kids and what I was seeing worked, you know, and kind of realizing that like I kind of had a decision of like, you know, being a teacher in the capacity that I was and kind of like push this creativity like aside or kind of like finding a way to make creativity and education kind of coexist with what I do, you know, and that's kind of like where Young Lions Roar was birthed, you know, kind of just being able to take what I know as an educator and what I know as a creative and kind of like blending them together to kind of make this program for students. You know, we've existed for 3 years now and worked with like a lot of schools within the Midwest, you know, even outside the Quad Cities a little bit. We work with schools in Cambridge, Illinois, you know, we work with schools like in Parsons, Kansas and stuff like that, you know, so like being able to kind of like do that and kind of see how creativity is like prevalent to all these different communities has been really, it's been eye opening and really, really cool to kind of see, you know?
Yeah. And it's such a great thing you're doing. And I loved what you were saying about the mental health aspects of it and just the literacy aspects of it. I mean, I know when you're talking about the pandemic and mental health, you know, I've got two daughters who are 9 and 11, and mm-hmm. with where the pandemic hit in their education, like it had such an effect on their literacy, you know? And I feel like that age group, especially that fourth, fifth grader age group that you were talking about, like a lot of them are struggling
because, yeah.
you know, all our teachers did the best they could online, but it's not the same as being in the classroom and
and experiencing something like right in front of you, you know? Yeah. And that's the thing, like I was just reading kind of like I was reading a report briefly over kind of like, I think I forget who did a lot of work during the pandemic and all that, but they just came out with a report of like saying how like this pandemic like has a long lasting effect on some of these kids, you know, growing up developmentally, you know? And for me, it's just like knowing that information, it's kind of like, we have a responsibility of like, okay, now that we know this, how can we kind of like help them along this kind of like space, you know, more specifically to like the, you know, the mental wellness part. And it's like, man, just giving them a space to kind of like, you know, figure themselves out, you know, that, and it's like, it's where that may not be poetry, you know, that may be like visual art or this is any other, but for me, like specifically, it's just like knowing that is like all the more of like a reason of like, man, like this is why this is important, you know, to kind of like help with like where kids are and where they're going, you know, on a kind of like a mental wellness level and all that, you know?
Yeah. It's really invaluable, that work to them.
Yeah.
Now, I want to shift gears a little bit. Because I've seen you perform your poetry before.
Yeah.
But I know you also kind of moonlight and do some battle rap.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people who my experience with rap battles is really the movie 8 Mile.
Yeah, yep.
But you know, I'm from Michigan, so that movie has a soft spot in my heart.
Yeah.
Tell me about like that scene versus slam poetry and kind of the differences in that and how you kind of shift between those.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, as of lately, it's kind of been funny seeing like the development of like the said spoken word poetry community like US-wide, because like a lot of like poetry spaces like have been really integrating aspects of battle rap into what they do. You know, I was in Houston back in September, and they had this poetry event called Barfest, which it was literally just battle rap between poets. And I'm like, this is battle rap. Like, this is crazy. You know, it's super interesting. But so like, and the thing about it is like, battle rap is what influenced me to write poetry when I was 11. You know, like, I tell people, like, I didn't read my first book of my own choosing until I was like in my 20s. So like, reading wasn't like that big to me like growing up, but the poets that spoke to me were rappers and battle rappers. You know, Nas was the first poet that influenced me to write poetry.
Yeah, but Illmatic is such a
amazing. Yeah. Like it's such a timeless piece. You know, and Godson, that album was the one that spoke to me when I was in junior high. You know, but also aside that, I was watching, you know, like when my parents were home, I was watching Smack DVD battles, you know, between like Loaded Lux and Murder Mook. And I was like, man, like, this is awesome, but I don't think I could do this. But that's where I kind of heard like these poetic devices that were like, man, this is really, really cool. And like, yeah, I never saw myself being involved in battle rap years later, you know, but I think it's just kind of like comes with the territory of being influenced by that so young, you know. But I think like the difference between them, you know, between like poetry slams and like when it comes to like battle rap is that when it comes to like they both have a sense of subjectivity, you know. Sure. even the most like well-organized slam poetry events that have like judges and all this, there's no objective scale. Like, it's literally all subjective.
Right.
Yeah, it's literally because I've literally seen slams where like you have like a poet who's well memorized and their piece is well executed and all that. Mm-hmm. I'd still see them lose to somebody who read off paper and who didn't have like the faculties that they had performance wise or reflection wise and projection wise. And it's because that person on the page read just so likely to read something that resonated with the crowd a little bit better than this person who came very seasoned. Sure. And all that. So, and in battle rap, it's the same thing, you know, where like, if someone, when you have two MCs battling, you know, you'll have an MC who just has that home team advantage, you know. Sure. Where like when they're spitting their poetry around, they're getting all the like visible and heard accolades, like, oh, this guy, like, run it back, this is amazing. With a person from out of town, like, they just might get crickets, even right. though they're like really doing what they're doing, you know. So both have a sense of subjectivity where like it's not really based on like something objective, you know. It's just all based on the people. So they have that in common. But when it comes to battle rap, it's just like, you got to come well prepared though. Like, you can't come and read your battle rap rounds off of phone. The moment you pull out a piece of paper,
right?
Or like read off phone, it's just like, hey man, like you'd have lost off the bet, you know. You got to come with it all up here.
Well, that was one thing that blew me away, like learning about battle rap, was just that, oh, like, not that it's all pre-written, but, like, you've got bars and rhymes up there that, like, you know, and you have in your arsenal that you're going to use and grab from. Mm-hmm. Versus it's not just all, I'm just improvising this.
Yeah. You do have some people who do improvise, although, like, there's a couple battle raps who, like, it's, and I'm amazed by those people who can, like, look to be able to, like, improvise something for 3 minutes every round, so nine. You're improvising almost 10 minutes of like,
oh my gosh,
stuff. It's
just
like,
crazy.
That is insane. Yeah. Like, I could never picture myself. Like, I got to have something where I'm like writing it and all that, but you have those people. But yeah, for the most part, it's like literally like pre-written work. I tell people like this who kind of like are like, kind of like apprehensive to battle rap. To me, like, it's no different than theater. It's literally, sure, you got these two MCs who in essence, they're actors. Cause like these MCs, they don't hate each other.
Right.
Like, a lot of the people that I battled, I'm good friends with. Some of the most fiercest battles I've had are with people who are now my, like, good friends. And we were friends before, you know? Like, my last event that I had in Des Moines was with someone who's a well-seasoned battle rap MC, but we were talking for months beforehand, just, like, him talking about how much he admired my work, and that's why he chose to battle me and all this, you know? So there's a sense of camaraderie that people don't see there. But I think, like the MCs, like, they have to almost like mesmerize you to a sense where you think what they're saying is real. And when you do that, I think that's where you really win, when you can really make it seem like that animosity or whatever you have is real. It's like you brought people into your story so much where like they're emotionally invested. Some of them are like upset at you, like, why is he in this person's face? It's just like when you can get that reaction, it's like you did what you're supposed to do as a battle rap MC, because you acted so well that everyone around you believed that you were.
You've got actual proof
Yeah,
it's, well, it's just, like sports, you know, we can be best of friends, but like we get on the court or on the rink or in the tennis court or whatever, like I'm gonna kick your butt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And for me, it's just like and that's what makes it fun, because again, like, it's like you got to operate out of this nuance of knowing that you're battling the person in front of you. So you got to be really competitive, but also you're doing this for, again, because like if for me, like I've never, I think there's only one case where I've had like a said home team an advantage, like here.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I'm always out of town. So like for me, it's just like, because I'm out of town, I got to really tap into this like energy to like make it where like even folks who are for this other person, I got to really make them believe like, oh, this guy's really good though, you know? Yeah. You know, yeah. So it's that's all it is. It's kind of like you have these two actors just writing scripts for each other that they don't know of, you know, and that's kind of like what it is. It's no different than theater, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I love having you as part of our community, but I've been so, I don't want to say proud of you, but like so excited to see all the stuff you've been doing regionally and nationally.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, I feel that is so important as an artist, is to just go out and get all those other influences from people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you may not have, I've never told you, but you kind of influenced that a little bit, you know. Actually, I think it was like, you really kind of influenced like me kind of being a lot more intentional about that. I remember when we had that beautiful mural that was made in downtown Moline, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like people had that whole like, why is somebody from out of town doing this and the other?
Yeah.
And you had a lot of good stuff to say. It's just like, hey man, that's the work of the artist, you know, you gotta sell yourself in other places. And when you said it, I'm like, that's actually true. Like, you know, it's like there's a lot of truth to that. It's just like, if this artist worked hard enough to like reach out to other places and they are recognized for their work and how good they are, it's just like, who are we to be upset about that? You know,
yeah.
It's just like, for me as a creative, like, what, there's no reason why I should, like, especially with poetry, since like we don't have like the poetry community we do have is the one, you know, we have Midwest Writing Center, you know, that speaks to a certain community of writers. But like with what I have, like, you know, with what the poetry community I work with, like, that's the only thing. So it's just like, for me, like, I shouldn't be just trying to like focus on how to make a career here, because there's not a lot of things. But if I go down to Nashville, if I go to Houston, if I go to, heck, even Chicago, 3 hours from here, you know, like I'm expanding like what I do as a professional creative and all that. And like, you need that part of like, you know, going to other places and all that, you know. And it shouldn't always be perceived as like this outsider is coming in and taking our stuff. And like, it's fun. I've received that from other places, but it's just like, hey, like that's just the work of a creative, you know. You gotta get out of your space and go to other places and find opportunities that aren't here in other places. You know, there's not places in the Quad Cities. I should say that it's not a norm in the Quad Cities to have places that pay poetry features.
Right.
You know, in Chicago there is.
Yeah.
You know, I can go to Chicago and get paid for a poetry feature and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And sell my merchandise in a place where people get the art of poetry enough where like, oh yes, we're definitely buying books. We're definitely buying sweatshirts and all this poet produces, because we get it. You know, we're all part of this said like hustle, so we get it, you know. It's the same in Atlanta, but like you got to go to those places. So yeah, you influence that a little bit. So yeah,
Well, no, and it's great, because then you bring that back and what you're learning in those other places here.
Exactly. And that's the thing, like just going to places, like being able to go down to Houston for the Right About Now poetry open mic, which is one of the biggest poetry open mics in the U.S. Like I'm good friends with the owner of that place now, because we've seen each other. And it's funny, because he used to do stuff at Augustana and all that. It's like, oh, that's cool. But that's where we made our connection. But like, you know, like seeing how they run their open mic, seeing how they like do these interesting events, like I said, like the Bar Fest and all that. It's like, oh, wow, like this can be done. So it's just like taking that knowledge and bringing it back. Like you said, it just makes it better where you're like, you just have I have a lot more ideas of like, oh, we can do this and we can do that and do this, because I've seen it done before. But it's like one of those things, if you don't see it, you have a hard time kind of formalizing it as like a thing that can be done, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. Well, I love watching your journey online and seeing all the great things you're doing.
Yeah.
And as I said before, the work you're doing with Young Lions Roar is really just phenomenal. And
yeah.
I hope to see it thrive and continue, and we hope to see all the great things you do.
Yeah, so I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for talking with me today and chatting about all this stuff. Thanks again to Quad City Bank and Trust for supporting Talking Art. For more information on Aubrey, you can check out his Instagram, Mr. Aubs. That's Mr. spelled out, MisterAubs. Or go to Facebook and check out Young Lions Roar for more information on the program. Aubrey, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Ben.
We'll hear you spitting soon.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.